Tonight, the major developments in the federal investigation into Donald Trump. The special counsel meeting with the former president's attorneys, a move that could signal Jack Smith's investigation is nearing its end. Then Nikki Haley fanning the culture war flames, a fact check on what she said over the weekend. And Apple debuting a $3,500 headset. But is there more to this than just a hefty price tag as the 11th hour gets underway on this Monday night? Good Monday evening. I'm Stephanie Ruhle with a lot of news to cover tonight. The special counsel's investigation into Donald J. Trump's handling of classified documents appears to be at a critical stage. And I know I've said that to you before, but this time I really think it's different. This morning, three members of Trump's legal team went to the Justice Department to meet with the one and only Jack Smith and some other officials. Remember, just 2 weeks ago, Trump's lawyers sent an official letter to Attorney General Merrick Garland asking for a chance to make their case. The Attorney General was not at today's meeting. We don't know everything that was discussed, but the Washington Post reports this. People familiar with the matter say Trump's lawyers asked the Department of Justice not to charge the former president. Earlier, former federal prosecutor Andrew Weissman said this meeting is a sign of what's to come.
There would be no reason to have the meeting if there weren't going to be potential charges. When you look at what the facts are, it would actually be a violation of the rule of law for Donald Trump not to be charged.
Not long after his lawyers left the Department of Justice, Donald Trump himself posted this on his social media platform, quote, "How can DOJ possibly charge me, who did nothing wrong, when no other presidents were charged?" The Washington, D.C. grand jury in the classified documents case is expected to meet again later this week. And there are also new developments in the investigations into Trump and the 2020 election. The Washington Post also reporting both federal and state prosecutors are focusing on Trump-funded studies to try and prove voter fraud, which, of course, no fraud was ever found. As I said, we got a lot to cover, so let's get smarter with the help of our lead-off panel, Sam Stein, veteran journalist and White House editor for Politico. Carol Lenig is here, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter for The Washington Post, and former New York prosecutor and civil rights attorney Charles Coleman. Charles, why would Jack Smith agree to this meeting now?
Well, Stephanie, it's not uncommon for prosecutors to meet with defense attorneys and give them an opportunity to plead their case, or in most cases, actually allow them to negotiate a plea deal. In this case, I don't think that's what's happening, but it's important as we unpack this that I take guys to 20 seconds of law school very, very quickly. You need intent and an act to prove guilt. And in this case, in all of the cases that Donald Trump is facing, the acts are not in question. It's a matter of intention. And so we're going to come back to this theme as we unpack the different conversations we're having tonight. But what we're going to see from Jack Smith's office, as well as other prosecutors, is focusing on evidence that is going to establish Donald Trump's intent. And so that's why you had this conversation today, because ultimately what his defense team was trying to do is say, listen, treat this as an administrative matter, not as a criminal matter. But because of the intent that Jack Smith has been able to establish, he is absolutely going to continue along the criminal prosecution track.
So, Charles, let's say you're one of Trump's attorneys tonight. Besides saying, sir, how about prepaying me? I don't know what's to come. What are you telling him?
I'm telling him that we're going to engage as many legal maneuvers as possible in order to try to drag this out. In terms of criminal liability, he does not have very much to stand on. He is going to try and basically argue that he did not have the intent necessary in order to be convicted. But I'm also saying to him, you are going to be indicted. We are going to have to fight this. Our best shot is to try to delay this as long as possible and then use your campaign as president as a sword and a shield to try to keep you as far away from this as we can. In the meantime, be quiet and maybe pick up a copy of the Count of Monte Cristo because you might need it.
Be quiet. Not happening, Carol. Donald Trump immediately posted to social media after the meeting. What can you tell us about what happened?
So what we have learned, what my colleagues have learned about that meeting is that Donald Trump's lawyers didn't do what probably the answer to your question should have been. You know, what should good lawyers be asking the Department of Justice right now? They should be trying to use the tiny bit of wiggle room that's available to them that Attorney General Merrick Garland gave them. That wiggle room was, I will not stop whatever recommendation Jack Smith has for me about charging the president, former president of the United States. I will not reject that recommendation unless the special counsel has broken any rules, violated any policies or procedures. If these lawyers are really strong lawyers, what they would have and should have done is say, here are the ways this prosecution plan violates policies and procedures. The problem is it's unlikely they have any evidence of that. And what Jack Smith has, and to be fair, what the Justice Department had months before Jack Smith was appointed, was evidence of obstruction. And all Jack Smith has done is get more of that evidence. Remember that what the Department of Justice had before a special counsel was named, they had evidence that Donald Trump kept classified records back from the federal agents after a subpoena was issued. That's obstruction with a criminal investigation. They had information that he did not allow them to actually comply and return those documents. Boom. Number two, Jack Smith gets another huge piece of obstruction evidence. What is it? Information indicating that Donald Trump instructed an aide to move documents from the storage room. And the Washington Post has reported, shockingly, that that move was a day before the FBI showed up to, you know, collegially arrive like the delivery truck and say, can we take back the classified records that you found? We're happy to take them from you. The day before, some of these boxes of records were moved.
We have to remind our audience all this information that our amazing reporters are coming up with. They're not getting it from Jack Smith's team. That team has every bit of information under a lockbox. So, Carol, tell us about this other investigation at Mar-a-Lago, potentially a flood that took place, the draining of a swimming pool that, lo and behold, possibly destroyed important documents. Why? Because they didn't have any dogs around to eat their homework?
It's hard to answer the questions with a straight face when you have this lead in, Steph, but let me try. So I think a hat tip, by the way, to CNN for this amazing story. I want to just say that this draining of the pool evidence is fascinating to me because the allegation is essentially that somebody may have drained the pool to give the cover of destroying server boxes where material from the surveillance tape was kept. Surveillance tape, as you may remember, Steph, the FBI and the Department of Justice were asking Trump organization to turn over surveillance tape that was taken outside the storage room. They wanted to see who was coming and going, and that's how they found out some of these boxes were moved. After they learned that there were hundreds of classified records still on the property, after Donald Trump's lawyers swore that they turned over everything. After all of that, they asked for more surveillance tape. But in October, this draining of the pool occurs, and there's a claim that some of the servers of the that involved the surveillance tape were damaged. This explains to me, at least in the big mystery, why the Calamari son and father have been interviewed by the grand jury. In those two people are responsible for the security tapes, responsible for pulling them. And this would be why Jack Smith would want to interview them about whether or not there was any tampering with the actual tapes the Department of Justice sought.
We definitely want those answers. Sam, we talk all about all the different investigations that Donald Trump is facing politically. The classified documents case in Florida, is that the one that's the hardest for Republicans to defend?
It's tough to rate the cases by the difficulty to defend them. They're all difficult to a degree. I mean, in a same world, paying off hush money to a porn star would be difficult to defend, but we're not in the same world. But I do think the classified documents case is the most cut and dry, right? In this case, you have the president clearly taking classified information with him to Mar-a-Lago, but also obstructing an investigation in efforts to get that classified information back. It's very simple. Very direct. I think most importantly, it kind of conjures up memories to 2016 when Trump made a big stink, and Republicans as well, about Hillary Clinton's handling of classified information. The other thing to note, which makes it difficult for Republicans, is that Mike Pence was just cleared for taking a classified document back with him from his vice presidential office. And Joe Biden is under investigation too. I believe it's an investigation, but the situations are demonstrably different. And so you're going to have one-on-one comparisons that Trump will have to figure out a way to complain about or explain away. I will say this, the other thing that's complicated for Republicans, this gets to Charles's point, which is if the correct answer for him legally is to just stop talking, and as a personality trait, he can't do it. I would just add that politically, it's beneficial for him to keep talking. He raises more money. He gets more attention. He skyrockets in the polls when he talks about a perceived injustice by the prosecutorial class against him. And so these things that are happening to him, including in the classified documents case, are highly damaging, put Republicans in an incredibly difficult position. But for Trump, in a very short-term political sense, they are advantageous.
But we live in a world of short-termism. So as we could say, these things are horribly damning for Trump. And I know our audience hates it when I ask this question, but do Trump voters, do Republican primary voters seem to care about any of this?
Yes, but they care in a different way than you might imagine. They care in that they feel empathy for Trump. They feel he's being targeted. They think he's being victimized. They care in that they will be more willing to open up their wallets or send cash to his campaign to help him fight what they see as perceived rogue prosecutor going after him. That's how they care. And you know, this, again, helps Trump in a very short-term political sense in that he can separate himself from everyone else in the Republican primary field. Not only that, for everyone else in that field, how they respond to this becomes a litmus test. How much are you willing to defend Trump? Keep in mind, Ron DeSantis, his drop in the polls began precisely because he did not rush to Trump's defense over the charges brought by Alvin Bragg.
Well, we'll see. Chris Christie is about to enter the race, and he's the one who's going to come out swinging for Trump from day one. We'll see how that works out for him. Charles, the D.C. grand jury is meeting again this week. A grand jury in Florida is to hear witness testimony this week in the classified documents case. What does that tell you?
It tells me that this case is expanding, and it's expanding because Jack Smith is leaving no stone unturned, and that there could be more that is going to solidify what it is that Donald Trump is facing. I want to very quickly talk about another point that's not that hasn't been discussed
around
the meeting. Donald Trump's defense team, in many respects, may be playing the long game. What do I mean by that? This is not the only case that they are likely going to have to talk to Jack Smith about. It is very possible. We have not talked about it. But just because Jack Smith's office has not mentioned anything about January 6th does not mean that's off the table. So there may be additional investigations that move forward. And at some point, these attorneys are going to have to meet with Jack Smith again to try to figure out what are the contours around the game plan. So what do? You have a meeting as early as possible. You try to build a rapport and you try to play nice, because just because Jack Smith hasn't said anything about January 6th doesn't mean it's dead in the water. It's a much more complicated case. This is much more straightforward, as Sam talked about. And so it is possible that this could be the test case for DOJ in terms of how they go about moving forward with a prosecution. So the meeting itself, in some ways, yes, it is about Mar-a-Lago. It is about what's imminent, as we've thrown around before with this potential indictment.
But you're saying this is a first date.
It's a first date. That's exactly what it is.
A first date in a really bad relationship. Carol, you know, I always want to talk about money. Your colleagues at The Post are reporting that investigators are looking into these Trump campaign funded studies on voter fraud, studies that didn't actually exist. What can you tell us?
You know, I'm really glad you zero in on this, not just because my great colleagues wrote about it, but also because it goes back to one of your favorite topics and mine, motive. You know, what is Jack Smith putting together right now? He's got plenty of evidence of, from what we can describe, obstruction. What appears to be the president directly, the former president, directly and indirectly trying to keep from complying with a subpoena. What else does he need to show if he takes this case to trial, if he indicts? I'm sure he will not have trouble getting a grand jury to agree with him, but if he takes this case to trial, what does he have to show? He has to tell the story of what motivated Donald Trump and what was his state of mind. Motive is not really critical to the charge, but it's important to the story, right? And so you asked the question about the research that he funded. Donald Trump knew he lost. He knew that he had not won the election. Why did he know? Because there were two different studies he commissioned in which he basically was told by his own paid, you know, for hire advisors, you did not win the election. The story that this is important to is about J6. If Donald, and this goes to Charlie's point, if Jack Smith brings a charge involving the effort to block the peaceful transfer of power, the effort by Donald Trump and his allies to overturn a democratic, free, and fair election, it's going to be important to tell the motive and intent and state of mind of Donald Trump. And these research studies help show he knew what was going on. Now, I'm going to flip to Mar-a-Lago if you guys can all hang on to your seats. But like the motive and intent on Mar-a-Lago is also really interesting. That story that Jack Smith has to tell to a jury, what is it? Donald Trump is rustling a classified document that is offered to him by his Pentagon, he alleges, to describe one of his options for attacking a foreign adversary, a war plan with Iran. And by the way, Iran, the most likely enemy that the U.S. government will have to engage in any violence with. But he's waving around this, and what is he wanting to do with it? He is waving around some of the most important secrets that our government safeguards under lock and key. What does he want to do with it? He wants to bash an enemy who has embarrassed him in the press and in books that are coming out in the summer of 2021. If Jack Smith brings a J6 case over the effort to subvert democracy by Donald Trump and his allies, that state of mind is going to be very important about him knowing he didn't win the election. And if he brings the Mar-a-Lago case, it's going to be very important to show that his motive was petty and venal, and that he was willing to sacrifice our government and the American public's security for his own personal goals.
He raised money from the American people to study voter fraud that he knew did not exist. We have to leave it there, but I have to ask you, Sam, is it true you and Carol are next door neighbors?
It is true.
So right now there is a wall separating the two of you. Like, you could actually be doing the segment sitting on her couch.
Yes, but Steph, I invited me over.
You know who I would have over here in a heart is his son, Jamie. He is like my best friend. So, Steph, if you can get him a contract,
okay, him perfect. And me Sam, will do this. School is almost out. You can give him a nap in the afternoon. Tell him he can stay up late. Next time everybody's on, I'm not even sure if we're going to have you on, Sam, but for sure, bring Jamie over to Carol's. Maybe you could whip something up in that kitchen. She has my favorite TV kitchen. But now that I know this, it changes everything. Neither of you are invited on independently ever again. It's a double or nothing. Carol Lenning, Sam Stein.
A joint deal, yes. With Jamie. Yeah.
Okay. Correct. Only if Jamie's there. And Charles, you unfortunately are stuck with me. When we come back, Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley, running for president of the United States of America, falsely claims trans athletes are to blame for suicidal thoughts in teenage girls. Former Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney and Reid Galen are here on that and the growing GOP field. And later, Apple unveils its first major new product in almost a decade, and it could be a game changer. Kara Swisher is here on all of it. The 11th hour just getting underway on a Monday night. Republicans in state houses across the country have backed nearly 500 anti-LGBTQ bills in 2023, according to the ACLU. And the topic came up this weekend as several Republican presidential candidates campaigned in Iowa. Here's what Nikki Haley said just yesterday.
The idea that we have biological boys playing in girls' sports, it is the women's issue of our time. My daughter ran track in high school. I don't even know how I would have that conversation with her. How are we supposed to get our girls used to the fact that biological boys are in their locker rooms? And then we wonder why a third of our teenage girls seriously contemplated suicide last year? We should be growing strong girls, confident girls.
Haley doubled down on that claim in a statement to NBC News. But for fact's sake, there is absolutely no evidence to support this. Our teen girls are in a mental health crisis. None of it has been proven to be tied with trans athletes going to their school. Back with us tonight, former New York Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney. He is the Biden nominee for OECD representative. And Reed Galen's here, co-founder of the Lincoln Project. He has also worked on a number of GOP campaigns, including John McCain, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and George W. Bush. Congressman, we have a mental health crisis with our teens. We have seen suicide rates spike. They have no association to trans athletes. Why would a politician, what lane is she looking to win to go down this road that's not even true?
Yeah, it's just cynical, and it's just an effort to scapegoat, you know, kids that are already in a very vulnerable position in our society, and to lay at their doorstep something that is much more serious and that serious people should have a real conversation about. And this has a real effect, you know. I mean, I hope there's not one trans kid out there who is taking her nonsense seriously. But we know that these messages do get through and that a lot of those kids are being raised in Republican households. And this kind of vicious rhetoric just contributes to the pain that so many kids feel coming to terms with who they are. This is not the country so many of us have fought for decades. And somebody like Nikki Haley, goodness, she made a name for herself taking down the Confederate battle flag. And now to see her veer into this this anti-LGBT stuff during Pride Month, by the way, is just really sad and pathetic, because what's clear is that, like so many Republicans, she decided to throw away whatever integrity or principle she had to try to do better in this MAGA party that's been created. And it might help her in the primaries, might not. It's not like her campaign's doing that well. But she's going to pay a price among swing voters in moderate areas if she were the nominee, because this stuff is way outside the mainstream.
Reed, what do you think? What she's saying is so far outside the mainstream. Even if you took a general audience that might be fatigued from just talking about trans issues all the time, where she's going is so far from the truth and so hurtful. Who does it win over?
Well, look, I think that what the congressman said is right. Who is it trying to win over? She doesn't know. Her campaign doesn't know. She is a woman without a lane. She is a woman without a country. She's a woman, frankly, without a party. And as far as I'm concerned, she's doing everything she can to try and finish fourth or fifth in South Carolina come early next year. But I think, you know, from my perspective, Stephanie, and I believe that you have daughters. I have two. To me, this is a broader indictment of just what the Republican Party is saying about our kids generally, right? She knows this isn't true. The number of trans kids, or the number of trans kids who, you know, started as boys or playing on girls' teams is what? In the thousands, maybe, in the country. And we're talking about 30% of young women, right? This is, you know, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of young women. She's making light of this. She's glossing it over for cynical political purposes. And because that's not enough, you know, we're making it harder on our kids to do everything, right? Since 2012, Gen Z has spiked in depression, not just girls, but boys as well, right? They are living in a time of incredible turmoil. And rather than understanding that broadly, she's making light of it, and she's trying to score really cheap political points on it. If she has a daughter, she should be ashamed of herself. She talks about how this is the issue of our time. I mean, what time is she living in? The 1700s, the 1800s? I mean, I'm not sure what time she exists in, other than how much longer she's got before the, you know, the coffers of her campaign run out.
The women's issue of our time.
That's what I have written down here. Women's issue of our time.
Yeah,
not access to abortion care.
There you go. I mean, if you were going to say make a list of the issues affecting the rights of women in America, you might start with the denial of basic reproductive freedom guaranteed by the Constitution, which cynical politicians like Nikki Haley are okay with. But look out. I mean, apparently the greatest threat to women in America are that there are some trans kids who might want to play sports in school. And it's offensive and it's wrong. And the fact is that the trans community is still subject to enormous violence in this country and discrimination. And this rhetoric gives a permission structure for people to hate on those kids. It's wrong.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was also in Iowa this weekend, and I want to share just a bit of what he had to say. Luckily, this isn't a drinking game. Watch.
As president, I recognize that the woke mind virus represents a war on the truth,
So we will wage a war on the woke. We will fight the woke in education. We will fight the woke in the corporations. We will fight the woke in the halls of Congress. We will never, ever surrender to the woke mob. We will make woke ideology leave it to the dustbin of history. It's gone.
Seven wokes in 26 seconds. Luckily, I didn't make you do a shot for every single one. Not economics, not health care, not affordable child care. I mean, take your pick. None of the things that your voters, when you knocked on their doors, told you mattered to them. So how has this become the number one issue?
Oh, look, I mean, I think this is Ron DeSantis, you know, showing you he's not very good at this, actually. I mean, I think the guy's the most overrated story in American politics. I think he sucks at it. He sucks at that stuff. The fact is that these are not issues that are relevant to people. I mean, and here's the big winner in this, by the way. The big winner in this is President Joe Biden, who's actually building roads and bridges, who's giving you a higher speed internet, who is actually going to remove every lead pipe from every water line in America, who's going to rebuild American manufacturing, is already doing it with billions of invested in new technologies and semiconductors. He's doing something about gun violence, doing something about equality in our society, whether you're talking about racial equality or LGBTQ equality, and also something about the climate. And I do think at the end of the day, the comparison between that nonsense and a guy like DeSantis, who is losing a war right now with Mickey Mouse, let alone a president of the United States. I like the comparison. I think Joe Biden looks better and better every day because he's serious and he's an adult and he's not perfect, but he's solving real problems. And he's talking about real issues, and he's doing it in a bipartisan way, by the way, as opposed to that nonsense that you're getting from Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis. And it's just not worthy of that political party.
Okay, then, Reid, what about the price of being normal, right? Tim Scott was on The View today, and comparatively speaking, he was pretty normal, and nobody's talking about him tonight. How do you wrestle with that, right? Because they're all headed to Iowa and trying to build their name recognition. And it's probably the hardest for Tim Scott, who didn't say something completely insane.
Well, look, I think that, Stephanie, your point is the right one, which is if you're going to be normal, you have to be all the way normal. If you're going to run for president in a contested primary against the former president that you now want to replace, you have to say he was a bad president. We should not have him for four more years. Right. He wrecked COVID. He gave stuff to the Saudis, maybe, or to the Russians on Iran. Right. Name the chaos. Name the insanity. Why would anybody want this? But the thing about Scott or the rest of them is they're so scared of the idea that they're not going to get these voters that like Trump. They're never going to get these voters. So let's say Trump's at 35-40%, probably enough to win in a lot of places already. What do you have to lose? Right. What do you have to lose? At least you can finish this campaign, such as it is, with your head held high and say, at the end of the day, I kept my dignity. I kept my honor. I kept my respect for myself and voters. They just can't help themselves. If these guys and gals wanted to beat Trump, they would all attack him all day, every day, minute in and minute out. But they can't do it because somehow they think maybe I'll be his next vice president. Maybe he'll treat me well. By the time this first debate comes around, Stephanie, which I doubt he'll even participate in, he will be saying terrible things about all of them. And Tim Scott will be as high up on that list as anybody else. Tim Scott was normal. But you know what? When he says that, you know, wokeism and leftism is the biggest threat the country faces, again, like Haley or DeSantis, they're out to lunch. Are a lot of, you know, moderate voters maybe tired of the wokeness? Maybe they are. But at the same time, you know what? Everywhere I look, people need, you know, are looking for jobs. People are looking for folks to come work. And from what I think is they got nothing to talk about because these are the kinds of people, this is the kind of movement, Stephanie, they can't talk about the future. They don't want to talk about it because they can't control it. And they know, as the congressman said, things are looking up and they must root against the American people. And I think that's why the president's in pretty good shape.
A reminder, I said Tim Scott was normal by comparison. Sean Patrick Maloney, Reid Galen, thank you both so much. Coming up, can Apple work its magic on virtual reality? Kara Swisher is here to discuss Tim Cook's newest endeavor when the 11th hour continues.
There is one more thing.
So, I got one more thing, and I'm really glad you liked everything. But there is one more thing. But we do have one more thing.
It's already been a big day. But we do have one more thing.
One more thing. Apple has launched its first major new product in over a decade. Today, the company unveiled the Vision Pro, a $3,500 mixed reality headset that uses VR technology for movies, video games, educational content, and more. It is a moment that Apple CEO Tim Cook called years in the making. So there could only be one person to give us her view. Kara Swisher, editor-at-large of New York Magazine and host of the podcast Pivot. And on with Kara Swisher. What is your take? Are you going to be wearing these futuristic ski goggles?
I am going to have a face computer. That's how it's going to go. It's called spatial computing, and that's what they're calling it. But face computer is the word I'm using. Yes, I am. I think it's a really interesting product. I think eventually it will be a lower price. And I like that Apple's experimenting in here. Other companies like Facebook or Meta have tried with Oculus. It hasn't been a hit. Obviously, Google Glass. I've been around for all of them, so I'm kind of excited.
Those are all your boys. When you see that old Steve Jobs, there's like a tear come down your throat.
I know, it does. But this has been around for a while. And let me just tell you, Tim Cook, we had a lunch years ago where he was obsessively talking about football. I think it was Alabama football and AR, which is augmented reality. And he was obsessed with this idea of face computing or, eyeglass computer or heads-up display. And I think this is the beginning of that, not the end by any stretch.
Then do you think Facebook will have spent all this money, Google will have spent all this money, but Apple is the one that's the best at product that will ultimately dunk the ball?
Well, they did it with the watch. They did it with AirPods. You know, this is a different product. It's a bigger product. It's a more expensive product. But people made fun of the iPhone when it came out, if you recall. It was too expensive. It was too high-end, this and that. And they sometimes have misfires. Look, the Hermes watch wasn't such a big hit, but some people bought it. People are trying to compare it to that, but I don't see that. I think it's going to come down in price eventually. Early adopters will use it. And everyone will find their use case depending on the developers and the app developers. Like Disney was there today, for example.
All right, new topic. Twitter ad sales is reportedly down 59%. Elon Musk recently said almost all advertisers have come back. On what ground is he saying that? Do you believe that? I mean,
I do not.
When you look at any consumer company right now, they are struggling. They don't want to be, don't want to be in the maelstrom that Bud Light has been in or Twitter. They're saying, I don't want to be Disney. I don't want to be Bob Iger. So companies are really weighing where they're going to go. Are they really going to dip back into Twitter?
Well, did it ever work? I think that's one of the issues, right? So did it work at all? And now did it work? And do I like to be near white supremacists? And then today, the Stanford Observatory was showing that there's online child abuse happening on the platform. You're being able to see it. Now they don't have access to the API, so they can't figure it out anymore because Twitter cut off academics on May 31st. And so there's all these issues. There's tons of issues. Now, ironically, Linda Yaccarino, who's the new CEO, just tweeted my first day today. I was like, good luck, Linda, because she's going to have a lot to contend with. She's hugely respected in the ad industry. She's going to do her best. I think they'll probably give her some ads because they like her to see if they work. But she's got to clean up the place and make it a safe place for advertising. And that's really the bottom line. And have ROI. That's it. That's return on investment that they make.
They're also talking about rolling out new things. They're saying they're going to have a video product coming soon. In theory, that would be great. But we saw what's even happening with their audio product. The Ron DeSantis spaces flop.
Yeah.
Can they actually come up with new things? They're down to bring your own toilet paper to work.
Right. I know that. Hand waving is one thing and new products are another thing. They got to make the current product work and it has to work for advertisers. And their current basic product is highly flawed because you can't go on there without getting inundated with, I've turned off comments, as you know. I don't really like being called all kinds of terrible names for women all day long.
I just call you that on the phone.
Yes, that's true. That's just you calling me every morning. But it's a real problem. She's going to have to rebuild this and she has to have a modicum of control. And let me just say, Linda is a very strong-minded, we both know her. She doesn't have control of this. And even though she is a very commanding executive, she's going to have a hard time handling Elon Musk.
If he runs the engineering side of it, is that sort of like he controls the brain and she gets the rest of the body?
He controls the product. That's the product. And so if you're an ad salesperson, they control the product. And so she's at his mercy in many ways. And that's where the action is in every bit of tech. So we'll see. She's good at it. We'll see if she can do it. But there's all kinds of red flags, including child abuse, white supremacy, just basic trolling, et cetera, and they've got to clean it up and make it a good ad product you want to put your advertising near, or else you'll end up with sort of weird advertising, which they're seeing a lot, gambling, weed, things like that.
I can't judge that.
No,
cable news.
No judge.
We got plenty of weird advertising.
It's true.
Kara Swisher, thank you. Right. Always good to see you. When we come back, new signs Ukraine's long-awaited counteroffensive has begun. But what is the reality on the ground when the 11th hour continues? Tonight, Russia claims Ukraine has launched a major offensive in the east. Ukrainian President Zelensky did not confirm or deny those reports. He simply welcomed the news we have been waiting for, he said, from Ukrainian troops in the eastern city of Bakhmut. NBC News' Molly Hunter has more.
Tonight, Ukraine is accusing Russia of spreading misinformation. The Russian Ministry of Defense announcing today that a major Ukrainian offensive had failed on the Eastern Front in Donetsk. Releasing this drone video, Russia says shows Ukrainian tanks being stopped in their tracks. The ministry also claiming hundreds of Ukrainian troops had been killed. NBC News has not independently verified these reports. One Ukrainian official calling it an absolute lie. They did not cause us any losses. Ukraine's deputy defense minister saying, we are continuing the defense, including counteroffensive actions. But Ukraine is not labeling any battlefield advances, including those in Bakhmut today, as a spring or a nearly summer counteroffensive. Instead, the Ukrainian military announcing a slick campaign of silence. It follows a deadly weekend, a two-year-old girl killed in a Russian strike in the Ukrainian city of Dnipro. And tonight, the Ukrainian foreign minister confirming Ukraine is equipped and ready.
When you go on the counteroffensive, one thing is to have enough of weapons to begin it.
But he added, it's a whole other thing to have enough to win it.
Retired four-star U.S. Army General Barry McCaffrey joins me now. I'm so glad you're here. What is your read on this back and forth?
Well, it looks as if we're on the front end of a gigantic battle in Ukraine. Ukrainians are clearly already starting the shaping operations. They've got a guerrilla warfare unit going on inside Russia. They're using drones to strike deep targets inside Russia. They've started probing attacks in the south. Russians reporting two brigades. Probably that happened or something similar. But the mystery right now, Stephanie, is where are the 9 to 12 modernized NATO technology brigades of the Ukrainian army? When will they strike? And I think it's going to be pretty soon. They've got terrific leadership, but they are facing 300,000 Russian troops and a giant Russian air force and navy that still has not been neutralized. So it's going to be a very brutal summer in Ukraine for these patriots.
Does Ukraine have what it, I don't even know how, I mean, once you lay that out, I don't even know how to ask. Does Ukraine have what it needs right now?
Well, it's got $70 billion of NATO technology and support. It's considerable. The Biden administration brought together NATO powers with tremendous humanitarian, economic, and military support, training support. Even the Germans have now provided a considerable amount of armored equipment. France, the UK has taken the lead. The Bucharest Nine, the Eastern Nine nations of NATO, are thoroughly engaged in supporting Ukraine because they're next. They know that. The Russians have been weakened tremendously. They've had probably 210,000 killed and wounded. They've lost maybe 7,500 armored vehicles, 600 some odd aircraft. But they are a giant country with considerable manpower reserves. And they know they're under the gun. So I would bet that Ukraine conducts a violent, rapid attack on the Russians, which will probably succeed in the coming weeks. We should hope so, because the vital U.S. national security interest and the same for NATO and the European Union.
Before I let you go, I did want to ask you about one other piece of news. U.S. Navy had a close call with a Chinese warship in the Taiwan Strait. How concerned are you about heightening tensions between China and the U.S.?
Well, I think it ought to be a considerable concern to all of us. The Chinese are clearly disputing control of international waters and airspace. This is coming from the top down. This is not rogue aircraft and rogue Navy captains of the PLA. So they see us as encircling them and preventing them from achieving dominance in the Pacific regions, which is exactly what we're doing. So unfortunately, now China and the U.S. are locked not just in considerable military confrontation, but also political and economic. This is not a good place to be. We do need to engage the Chinese on more than mill-to-mill basis.
General, every time you come, you make us a whole lot smarter. I really appreciate you staying up and joining us tonight. When we come back, the Kansas City Chiefs meet the Commander-in-Chief when the 11th Hour continues. You don't want to miss this.
We got the fact that I'm going to the White House next week.
Oh, what are you most excited to see at the White House?
You know what I want to see. I want to see the hidden
Oval Office.
Yeah.
You want to see the actual desk because you think that there's a clip that actually
be going around and banging on
the little button. Trav, please, while you're at the White House, do not National Treasure the White House.
The last thing before we go tonight, hail to the Chiefs. Travis Kelce and the Kansas City Chiefs were honored at the White House earlier today for their Super Bowl victory over the Philadelphia Eagles earlier this year. President Biden, of course, let them know that that win made things a little awkward at his house. Watch this.
I married a Philly girl. That explains a lot, doesn't it? Fortunately, she is overseas right now in the Middle East. She's a rabid Eagles fan. And on the way the game ended, I might be in for a rough night. Jill still doesn't even believe the Eagles player who acknowledged the holding penalty. But I figure if the Kelce family can make it work with Travis and Jason, first two brothers to play against each other in the Super Bowl, then there's hope for the rest of us. The Chiefs not only hold the title again, they're building a dynasty. Super Bowl champs in 2020 and 2023, dominating the league with 64 wins in the last 5 years, the best record in the NFL. You know, it's no surprise you got a young quarterback named Patrick. Boy can play, man. You also got Travis, one of the greatest tight ends ever. You got a young team built from unheralded draft picks. It turned into a deep roster of six All-Pros, explosive offense, and a tough defense. And then there's Coach Andy Reid. I was asked by the mayor of Philadelphia to arrest him and take him back to Philly, but I can't do that.
Also, our resident and dear friend Chiefs fan, former Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill, was at the event and got herself a selfie with the president. So congrats to Claire and all the Chiefs kingdom for their Super Bowl victory. And on that victorious note, I wish you a very good night. From all of our colleagues across the networks of NBC News, thanks for staying up late with me. I will see you at the end of tomorrow.